Hello, and welcome to the financial podcast, Future Rich. I am your host, Barbara Ginty, and also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I am here today with one of our expert interviews, which I'm very excited about. And we have Daniela Pierre Bravo from NBC, and she is co-authoring a book with Mika Brzezinski. So I thought she'd be a great addition to our expert lineup. So Daniela, tell us a little bit about yourself. You have a really interesting backstory.
Sure. So I am a booking producer at Morning Joe right now, which is where I met Mika and we worked together. In addition to that, I'm a contributor for her website on NBC News, which is Know Your Value. And I got started at Morning Joe through the PAGE program about five, maybe six years ago. And
that's an incredibly isn't that an incredibly competitive program?
You know, it is. I was pleasantly surprised when I heard back. Before I decided to apply, I read all of like the community boards online saying that it was harder to get in than Harvard and all these sort of intimidating factors. But I had gone through a little bit of kind of my own trials and tribulations before I got to the PAGE program that kind of really gave me the confidence to apply. So I think, you know, this is getting into the PAGE program was a perfect example of, you know, how much your ability to set your mind to an objective and actually do it is, you know, where it can get you.
Well, yeah, I think that's incredibly important because I think that we see a lot, with the podcast and with interviewing women that a lot of it is your mindset and knowing that you can tackle whatever the obstacle is, being a personal finance goal or a career goal.
Totally. I mean, I think those things were, you know, my finances and my lack of networks or connections were kind of my biggest barriers starting out. So, I mean, in high school, I'm a DACA recipient. So
you immigrated, right? You and your family immigrated to the country?
Yes. And I didn't know this, but when I was, you know, applying for colleges, like a junior in high school does, going into senior year, really excited about the prospect of, you know, all of the different colleges you could go to and, you know, hoping that all your grades and extracurricular activities really do pay off. I was kind of stunned at the realization that I was undocumented. And so that meant a lot of things that sort of prevented me to be able to think about having the traditional way into college. So I didn't have any ability to get any government loans.
And that was because you were not a U.S. citizen. Is that right?
That's right. I was undocumented. So that immediately takes off your ability to do a lot of things that people take for granted. So, you know, my family couldn't afford to take me to college. And so usually somebody in that position would, you know, ask for a, you know, a government loan that you would then pay off like most, you know, students do that can't afford going to college. That I wasn't eligible for that because of my status. I couldn't drive. I couldn't, you know, work because, you know, you're not able to do that when you're undocumented. So I had to be sort of creative in the ways that I found, you know, a way for me to get what I wanted, which at that point as a senior in high school was, you know, just to be able to go to college and pay my way through. And so that was a struggle, but I found out really early, a finance, kind of how to by myself, because when you're faced with not going anywhere but up, you kind of have to figure things out on your own.
I think it's really impressive. I think people could go either direction. I mean, there's definitely people would say, well, these are all the obstacles, so I guess it's blocking my path, so I'm just going to stay here.
Well, I think one of the things that worked for me was kind of thinking about things creatively. I was always in a sort of survival, you know, problem-solving autopilot mode, mm-hmm. just because of the situation that I was in. There was no guarantee or safety net on anything that I did, so I started thinking creatively. So I thought, you know, when I was in a senior in high school and into college, I thought, okay, well, if nobody's going to hire me, I'm going to work for myself. So I was an
independent That's so incredible.
Contractor. But I was 18 years old, and you know, it's like, how do you do that? So, you know, thankfully, I before I turned 18, I had a Mary Kay consultant. I was really into beauty back then. I still am. And she, you know, approached me with the opportunity to be a consultant and grow her business. And, you know, when you're a Mary Kay consultant, you're an independent contractor. So you represent yourself. And so I was out there when I was 18 years old. I was an independent contractor and, you know, hiring people around rural Ohio to work for me. And I was training women on financing and accounting. I was like this little 18-year-old, like trying to figure things out as I went, but just really studied up, whether it was YouTube videos, whether it's the seminars that the company put out or the regional events that were for, you know, kind of seeing the inside and the outside of the business. And, you know, I was learning how to, you know, build a business from the ground up when I was 18 years old, not because I wanted to do it full time, but because I wanted to find a way to kind of get to college. That was my only goal back then. So I made it into college. I got into Miami University, and not knowing that I could, pay my way through until the end. Right. So I think that's one of the things that I learned, in my number one rule of finance. I think it can be really overwhelming and intimidating. And especially if you come from a place where you have very little or nothing at all, which mm-hmm. was my case. And so I think that a lot of people, tune out, you know, finance talk right away if they come from a place where they're marginalized and don't feel like they're part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
But I think that one of the things that worked for me was to take it one step at a time. And I think that if you have the opportunity, if you have money in the bank or you have money to move around, then having a long-term goal is something that is sort of in your budget that you can kind of work a little bit at a time with. But if you're coming from a place like I did, where you don't have any money and you have absolutely nothing to work with, you literally take it one day at a time. So when I was, when I wanted to go to college, I didn't think, okay, how am I going to make it until senior year?
Right. Because that's too long to think. I agree. You have to break it down into smaller bites.
It was so daunting. And granted, I was with, you know, constant stress and, you know, it wasn't easy at all. Like I was going to classes and, you know, my mom was calling the bursar office, like pleading them not to, you know, take me out of classes. Like this was a, you know, something that was a recurrence every single semester.
So you always had your fingers crossed, hoping you would make it through.
Yeah. And it was, you know, a culmination of doing things that, you know, were sort of creative. I worked for restaurants where they, you know, sort of paid me cash. And I was a Mary Kay consultant.
Did you go into the bursar's office with like a stack of cash?
Yeah. I mean, I did at that point, I did have a student account at Chase.
Okay.
I did have a student account at Chase because I did have a social security number. So,
okay.
So I was able to do that. But yeah, I mean, I had, it was really interesting. Like I was, you know, depositing, you know, things that, you know, cash into Chase. And I was like literally for some time holding cash under my like mattress because, you know, like I didn't think about it too much. I just kind of did anything that I could to make it work because if I didn't take care of myself, then I would, you know, I had the decision to either do that or just stay at home with my arms crossed and hoping.
I have a question.
Something. Yeah.
So, because a lot of people would say, I can't afford to go to college. You know, loans aren't available to me and my parents aren't going to help me. So I'm just not going to go. What made mm-hmm. you work that hard to get the college degree?
You know, I think it was like desperation. Like I so badly had been instilled, like my family, like their main goal when they brought me here. And I think that this is, you know, the typical immigrant story, which mm-hmm. is so true. They want the best for you. And as an immigrant, you know, student and, you know, kind of trying to figure out my way, I wanted to make their sacrifice worth it. So mm-hmm. there was no way that I was going to sit at home and just wait for something to happen. You know, DACA didn't come out until right before I graduated. So that wasn't even a glimmer of hope. And, you know, there has been, since when I was in college and high school, there has been so many kind of promises in Congress that, you know, people would take care of people in our situation. There's been DACA bills that have been brought to vote, and none of them have passed. So there was a real sense of disillusion and desperation, and that was sort of the only way. I didn't know if even and when I graduated, what I was going to do with my degree, right? Because I couldn't right. work. So it was all kind of a hope.
But that's why it's good you took it little by little.
Little by little, yeah. And I think that's true. That's why I say it's true. And whether you talk about finance, whether you talk about your career goals, I came again from a position where I was very sort of marginalized. I didn't have the networks or the connections, and I just made it work. And I think that you have to be proactive in everything you do. So I didn't just have one job. I had two jobs. And when I graduated college, and this is how I got experience in the media industry, was I put all my eggs in one basket and decided to go to New York City because I knew that I was in a position where I was undocumented still at that point. Okay. DACA hadn't come out, and I was desperate. I had, you know, fast forward 3.5 years into college, and I didn't have big name companies in my resume, which is something that you need to get to, you know, like an NBC or, you know, a big company. So mm-hmm. I decided to apply everywhere and anywhere to New York City because I knew that that was the place where I was going to be able to learn from the best and open and grow my network. So I decided to apply everywhere in New York, and I ended up hearing back from like the small agency, which coincidentally was Sean Combs's marketing agency, Blue Flame Agency. And this was back when interns were not paid. Okay. So that was played to my favor. Yeah, but that played to my favor just because of my situation. And so I thought, you know, I made it 3.5 years into college. I'm going to figure out how to, you know, be able to support myself with an unpaid internship and living in New York City. I'm going to find a way to do that.
And living in one of the most expensive cities.
New York City, absolutely. And so they called me back, Blue Flame did, which was a Bad Boy Entertainment agency, their marketing agency, which essentially is the agency that Mr. Combs has to market all of his products. So Ciroc, Sean Combs, what is the name of the clothing company? Sean John? I don't remember.
I think it is. I think maybe Sean John.
Yeah. And then the record label. So I heard back, and I was in the middle of the library study for an econ exam. I think it was during exam week. And the receptionist called me and had sort of a preliminary interview with me, right? Because I think, especially in New York City, they always have like two or three interviews for respective internships. So anyways, we talked, we hit it off, and on my resume, again, this is going with my no excuse mentality, mm-hmm. I had put on my resume that I lived in New York City. So I actually gave them the address of the Columbia dorms, which, you know, coincidentally is where I ended up living.
But you weren't living there at the time.
I was not living there. I was in the middle of Ohio, in the middle of the cornfields of Oxford, Ohio. And so I said, there is no way that the manager of this internship is going to give me a call if I'm in the middle of Ohio, because they're going to need somebody to start in like 3 or 4 weeks, and they're not going to want to, to move and to, you know, because, you know, it's very unlikely that somebody moves, you know, across the country and starts a job
for no pay
out of the blue. Exactly. Absolutely. And so I was on the phone with them, and they said, you know, how about you come in for an interview? I was like, great. And they're like, can you come in tomorrow? And without thinking, I said, yes, absolutely.
Oh my God.
Tomorrow. And so I was so excited. I turned, you know, I hung up and I realized, okay, I'm still in the cornfield. I'm still in Ohio. And so my, again, brain went to autopilot, you know, problem solving mode. My first thought was, okay, I can't get on an airplane, right? Cause that would have been ideal. I would have got there in like 2 hours, but,
right.
I can't because I don't have a state ID and you know, I just can't get on a plane. And so I ended up thinking, okay, how else could I get there? Bus. So I scoured the Greyhound bus website, was on the next bus out, and then after like 18 hours later.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Have you ever been on a Greyhound bus?
I don't think I've been on the brand of Greyhound. I have been on buses.
Okay. Well, from Ohio to New York, there's like four or five stops, and they're all, for some reason, overnight, or that was what I was stuck with. So I didn't sleep at all. And it was like, but it was a great time for me to, you know, this is like the optimist in me. It was a great time for me to study up on the company and, you know, go through interview questions and go over the questions that I was going to ask and just be really prepared, because I really didn't want to miss this shot. It was my last shot. So I got to Port Authority, like literally cleaned up in the bathroom.
In the bathroom.
Port Authority, not the nicest bathroom.
Definitely. I would probably rank that as like the lowest.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I got to the interview like an hour before and just like waited, did the interview. They hired me a week later, and I had to come, you know, with a game plan on how to, you know, support myself in the city. So I got that internship, and then I also ended up interviewing and got an internship at Viacom in their ad sales department. So like not the most sexy part of the business. So I wasn't doing production or working for any of the shows, but it kind of, I made it work, right? Because I just wanted a way in the door. And I think that that's another lesson for the people that, you know, don't have connections or don't know how to start where you can, make the connection where you can. And so at that time I had like a marketing background. I had a minor in it, and I had been involved in different organizations that allowed me to do sort of real projects, like real life projects with real clients. So that was enticing for, that ad sales internship. So I ended up getting both internships, unpaid again, and I made it work. I was, I did a cash paying job as a babysitter. I was a dog sitter. I was a dog walker. I worked at a bar, and have to go up to people and like ask for free happy hours, and I'd have to go up and get their email addresses. And I remember I got a quarter. Was it a quarter or a dollar? It was a quarter for every name that I signed up.
A quarter.
So like literally I would go into a bar and they're like, okay, you have 3 hours, and I would just have to just stay in the bar for 3 hours and just go up to people, as many people as I could in that bar for 3 hours, and kind of tell them about the opportunity of getting a free happy hour, sign them up for an email, and then turn that list at the end of the night into the bar. And I got a quarter for each dollar, for each person.
So 100 people is only $25.
Yeah, but I was like, okay, $25. It's better than what I had before entering the bar. So I did that. And then I also, you know, promoted at clubs too, which I just, you know, in New York City, that I had no idea what I was doing, but this was like my summer of discovery, right? So I was doing anything and everything to make it work. And I did. And I got a great experience from those internships, not only on the know-how to like how to, you know, behave in an office environment, and just like really being a sponge to everything around you, and making it work by like really working hard, both in the internship and just kind of trying to make money outside of it. And that was the summer where DACA came. And you can imagine, I had no idea. None of us knew. When I say us, DACA, I mean the people that are now recipients of the DACA program. Mm-hmm. We had no idea that was coming. And so you can imagine the type of immense gratitude and sort of
relief, right?
The relief that there was an opportunity. And granted, it was not a permanent solution. It still is not a permanent solution, but it's something to hold on to. And it was so much better than what I had before. So with that program in hand, I was able to apply to places like the NBC PAGE program, which supplemented with the internships that I did in the summer before then, really helped me get noticed, because now I had not only my experience in college and the involvement that I had in college and the grades, but I also had these big internship names.
I think it's really impressive. And I think our listeners will probably notice that everything that you look at, rather than seeing what the roadblock or obstacle is, you see the positive in it. And I think that mm-hmm. must be such a huge contributor to your success, rather than saying, well, I don't want to be at Viacom and ad sales because it's not glamorous. You're like, okay, this is the way into a big company, and a big name on my resume will help me get to the next step, which might be what I want. And so I'm willing to do this to get there.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, my personality, like, I'm not like the 100% optimist. I'm more of a pragmatic. So I see the critical part in things just because of like the things that I've had to go through. Mm-hmm. But you kind of learn how to be a problem solver. And I think that's one of the things that Mika really liked about me, because I was able to problem solve anything and everything in her sort of Morning Joe life. Even if this means you starting out in a job and getting a coffee, like, absolutely correct. Like, that people are going to notice that. Yeah. Mika, I think that's one of the reasons why she kept me around originally. It was because I got, you know, that black-eyed misto, like, perfect. granted, my responsibilities started becoming, you know, more important after that. But that's the way I got her attention, was by getting her coffee right at the beginning.
Taking that job that some people would think is not important, but taking everything you do seriously and doing your best job at it.
Yeah. And I think it's great to have lofty goals. Like, I wouldn't be where I am without having lofty goals. But I would say for people, whether it's trying to get their finances in check, or, you know, get to that dream career, or get themselves in the door, or anything that they want in their sort of goal checklist, think of that lofty checklist, but also dumb it down. Like, what are the steps that you can be doing today that are going to get you, even if those steps are really tiny? So I'll give you a perfect example. Okay. For college. When I was like my sophomore year in college, I, you know, was trying to be creative in the ways that I could support myself in college. And I was scouring creative writing contests. Right? So like, that's not something that would immediately come to mind. And that's probably not something that pays that much. You know, I think I got only like a couple of $100 from it, because I ended up, you know, writing the essay and winning it. But it's an opportunity. I think that people who, like me, come from a place where solutions are not readily available, or, you know, kind of come to you at the palm of your hand. Mm-hmm. You've got to learn to be opportunity obsessed. Yep. And you've got to learn how to be able to take things down to sort of rudimentary ways of thinking and looking for opportunity around you everywhere.
Well, like, so, what you said, break it down one step at a time, so it's not daunting.
Yeah. So whether it's, you know, looking for scholarships that are, you know, privately funded, or whether it's, you know, becoming part of organizations that pay for your room and board when you don't have the money to, you know, to do that, or I don't know, like, taking things one step at a time, you know, that really made a difference in my life and got me to eventually where I want to go.
Well, absolutely. And advocating for yourself, right? A lot of people, I think, would be saying, well, I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know how I'm going to live there. Looking at all the future problems. And you definitely said, okay, I'm first going to, I need a big name. So I'm going to get the interview. And then you said yes to the interview, and then figured out how to get there. And then once you got the job, then figured out what the, a lot of people get hung up, I think, on the future, what I like to call future problems, right?
Yeah.
So if I get it, I don't know where I'm going to live. It's not paid. How am I going to do it? And then that stops them, right? Because they're thinking about the end result and how they're going to get to the end, rather than saying, okay, well, that's step 10. Let's do step one. If I get to step 3, then I'll do 4 and 5, you know, rather than breaking it down, as you said, into little bites, and then being optimistic. And I would even say gritty about how you're going to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, we always talk about the importance of advocating for yourself, and, you know, it's a good thing, but, you know, when it's directly correlated to confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you come from a place where you're either having trouble with your finances, or you feel like you are so far away from being in the network of connections that you need to get you where you want to go, that can diminish your confidence. And I think that for me, one of the things that was most helpful in terms of advocating for myself, yes, we have to learn how to say it, and having, like, you know, an amount of work under our belt to be able to advocate for ourselves. But confidence is where it starts. And I think that sometimes in my position, and especially in my position, I had to totally fake it till I made it. Because When I went in for those initial internships, or when I, you know, went in for the, to interview for the PAGE program, I totally had imposter syndrome, especially because of my sort of undocumented background. And at that point, I had a seat at the table because I had DACA, so I was able to apply for jobs. But, you know, I always kind of felt outside of, like, the main network of connections. And, my friends and their families had, you know, a lot more money than my family did. So I always kind of felt outside of the grid there, but I totally faked it till I made it. And I, you know, constantly battled the imposter syndrome. So
I love that, though. I think it's so important. And I can definitely relate to having done that myself, having to fake it until you make it. And another really good way of saying it is fake it until you become it. Because if you fake it enough, you eventually grow into what that is. And then you kind of wake up one day, and I'm sure you're having that right now, and you're like, wow, I'm here.
Yeah, totally. And I think that one of the things that helped me overcome imposter syndrome is to hold on to anything, right? So the fact that I was, I had to constantly say this to myself, right? Because I was constantly doubting myself when I, you know, was flying into, or not flying, when I was going into a bus into New York and getting in the door at, you know, Sean Combs' company and trying to, you know, sell myself when I was, you know, knowing my background and all that stuff. So I had to hold on to something, and I had to tell myself, you know, Daniela, you from 18 years old, you owned your own business. You hired people around Ohio. You you put yourself through college, even if it was a semester at a time and taking a semester off to do it, you did it. And so that had nothing to do with the internship, right? But it had everything to do with my confidence level and my ability to believe in myself and to sort of take that energy and, you know, center it into what I was doing at the time. So I think that we constantly have to, as women especially, work on our confidence and hold on to really sort of solid things that you've done to be able to center that confidence to something that you're currently working with, because that helped me overcome imposter syndrome. And as I work on it every day, I still have to remind myself
of what you've done,
of what I've done. And I'm constantly having sort of pep talks with myself. And I really encourage a lot of young women to do it. I know it sounds silly, but
it doesn't at all. I kind of do something similar. And I'm also curious, do you have like a pep up song, like some that you listen to if you feel like you can't get that confidence that you're looking for? Or
a pep up song? You know, I'm like a sucker for New York City songs.
Okay.
I think that like really helps me all the time. Okay. You know, because I'm one of those type of people that, like, I always wanted to be in New York just because I felt so out of the ability to gain access. And I think that I always thought, even in high school when I was, you know, in the shadows still, and when I say in the shadows, I mean, you know, I didn't tell anybody of my status.
Got it. Okay.
Because, yeah, so I wanted to be in New York City because I knew that it was going to be the place where, if anything, it would allow me to, you know, find a way, right?
Yep.
So I'm always of the thought of like find a way to make it work. And so I think that, you know, a pep up song for me would be like Empire State of Mind
by Alicia Keys
and Jay-Z, just because it's, you know, it embodies everything about New York City.
No, that's great.
Which I love. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the book that's coming out.
Yeah. So we're so excited about it. So it comes out May 7th, and it's a collaboration between Mika and I. And obviously, Mika is a pioneer of, you know, women, and, you know, one of the pioneers of women empowerment. And with her book, Knowing Your Value, and the re-release, Know Your Value, she chronicled, as you know, her own sort of, you know, what she went through to kind of close her own gender pay gap. So amazing book.
Which was quite large, hers.
Yeah. Yeah. She, you know, you had, you were one of the contestants in one of her conferences. So that her message is real. And she's kind of, you know, allowing me this platform to talk about not only my story, but kind of giving this special group of young women, a different message, or the same message, but slightly tweaked. to kind of talk on their narrative and their life experience. So with the book, we talk about my story, and we talk about the things that I had to overcome and why we're writing the book together. And by the way, like the reason why we're writing the book, is because I came to her, and I had my sort of own know your value moment, with her pitching her this idea.
How did you pitch her? Because she's a very busy lady.
Totally. And even me, who I work with her, this was like two and a half years ago when I pitched her the idea of opening up this platform of kind of gaining access. But you're right. She's totally busy. And even me, who, you know, was the first person to see her, you know, when she came into the studio and I would, you know, work late into the night with her for other events once in a while, she's still busy. And it's not like I can sort of chit chat with her.
That's
and
what I was going to say.
All the time. Yeah. She's super busy. And, you know, I'm of the idea is when you're walking in the door as an entry-level assistant or a coordinator, as I was, you've got to kind of know your place at first, and you gradually have to come to gain the respect of somebody. And that was my thinking with Mika. Like, I didn't want to overwhelm her with my own backstory because I was there to do the job.
Yep.
And I understood that fully. Like, I was just there for the first couple of months to get her coffee right, print scripts, made sure she had the right clothes to go on a set, and that was it, right? Uh-huh. So I understood my place, and I enjoyed doing it. And, you know, I valued my small role there because I came with such a hunger to just do work, any work, at that level. So things evolved with our relationship. You know, I went from somebody that assisted her and made her life easier to now a collaborator in this book.
That by itself is incredible.
Thank you. And the reason why it happened was because about two years into us working together, we had a show in South Carolina for Morning Joe. And I was there, you know, kind of managing the set and working with guests and making sure they got there on time and just dealing with logistics and making sure that Mika was all set with anything that she needed for the show. And in the middle of the show, I remember her saying, you know, I have this event, this woman's speech that I have to do in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And again, we were in South Carolina this afternoon. Can you come with me? And I was like, of course, absolutely. It turns out her chief of staff fell ill at last minute, and she couldn't staff our show. So Mika, the first person that she thought of was me. So I was brought along, and it was just me and Mika. So it was alone time that I usually don't get. And so we were on, I think, like a 30-minute car drive to the private plane, and then we had time on the private plane together. And during the car ride, we made small talk, and, you know, I said, you know, Mika, I have an idea that I wanted to run past you. You know, you've built up such an amazing platform, you know your value. Her platform was sort of fully fleshed out. She had the first couple of conferences, as you know, that were such a success under her mm-hmm. belt. So she was really, you know, kind of dominating this platform and doing an amazing job with it. And I said, you know, I'd love for you to give me your opinion on this, kind of, and I didn't know if it was going to be a blog. I didn't know if it was going to be like a website. I didn't know if it was going to be like any, I didn't know how I was going to live, but I had this idea of this platform called Access, which was essentially a platform for young women or men of my generation, Millennial Z, millennials or Gen Z, that didn't have, like me, access to the things that they wanted for their career. So whether that was a mentor, whether that was, you know, financial access, whether that was the access to the know-how on how to apply to places or get themselves in the door. So sort of a really lofty, sort of not fully fleshed out idea, right?
Yes.
But it was something that I felt strongly about because it was directly correlated to my life experience and my own personal narrative. And, you know, that got Mika curious because she, of course, is, as you know, somebody who roots for women and wants to help women. But she didn't really know about my backstory. So she didn't know that I was a DACA recipient. She didn't know that, you know, I was the oldest of five, and that we
put yourself through college and
put myself through college and kind of had all these like tribulations in my, you know, personal life, and also, you know, getting to where I need to go. But again, like she had no reason to, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is something that I don't like sort of mixing my personal life with my work life. And I would encourage young people not to do that when they first walk in the door. But this was a moment where I thought I had a window of opportunity, and I was nervous, right? Because, you know, Mika, like I'd worked with her, but she's intimidating.
Yeah, she is intimidating, like, and she's tall, which makes it, for as a short person like myself, is more intimidating.
Totally. Yeah. But she's great. And, you know, the whole ride, I was like, should I say something? Should I not say something? And that was kind of like my know your value moment, that was a moment where I said, okay, I'm going to advocate for myself and for this platform, and Mika could either take it or, you know, worst case scenario, she'd be like, cool, and give me like a small piece of advice, or best case scenario, she wants to, you know, maybe do something with this. And
you don't know until you ask, even though it's so scary.
You don't know. And if I wouldn't have asked,
you'd always wonder.
I would always wonder, and we would not be writing this book together.
That is incredible.
So yeah, it's really exciting. And, you know, the best thing is that it's going to help people that were, you know, whether it was people in my situation where they feel like they, you know, don't know how to either get themselves in the door, advocate for themselves, you know, build a network. Hopefully my story will be able to kind of inspire them to create their own narrative on how to get themselves where they want to be. Or, you know, if it's people that are well connected and don't necessarily know how to leverage their network or connections. We really hope that this book is going to help a lot of young women and maybe hopefully men.
Well, I can't wait to read it. And for our listeners at home, the book is called Earn It, Know Your Value and Grow Your Career in Your 20s and Beyond, and is written by Mika Brzezinski and Daniela. The book is going to be released on May 7th of this year, 2019, but you can pre-order your copy now on Amazon. You can check our social, Instagram, and also on my website, barbaraginty.com, for links so that you can pre-order your copy today. I would highly recommend it because we, as you heard from Daniela today on our podcast, she has lots of great advice, and you're going to find even more in the book. So Daniela, thank you so much for joining us today on the Future Rich podcast. We really appreciate it. And for our listeners, we appreciate you listening. Please subscribe and rate us. And if you want to check out our online personal finance classes, you can do so at www.planancial.com.